everyone, welcome to the Defense Lines, Hungary's first podcast on the control functions in banking, insurance and corporate sectors. My name is András Bácsfalvi and I'm your host for the show that brings you real value and hands-on takeaways from the field of compliance, anti-money laundering, IT security, fraud prevention, risk management and internal audit. In order to achieve these ambitious goals, I'm gonna be joined by my colleagues who are not just the best in what they do, but they also have inspiring personalities that helps them through their journey of their professional lives. My today's guest is Laura Gyarmati. Laura has over 10 years of compliance experience, primarily in the fintech sector, mostly around financial crime. After finishing her legal degree in Hungary, she decided to do her master's degree in international business law in Vienna, where her career started. She has since moved to London, where she has been heading up different fintech companies' compliance departments. She really enjoys her job, which she also considers her passion, which is the fight against financial crime. Laura has two beautiful little daughters and enjoying spending her spare time with the family, as well as reading Scandinavian thrillers and traveling. Hello, Laura. Welcome to the Defense Lines.
Hi, András. Thank you so much for having me.
The fintech industry is all about dynamism and innovation, a space where agile players harness new technology and challenge the status quo of the traditional financial services industry every day. Undoubtedly, this delivers substantial opportunity for those involved in the sector, but at the same time, financial criminals are similarly leveraging technology and using advancements to devise new ways to further their illicit activities. In this fast-paced space, characterized by evolution and a growing financial crime threat, what key elements are at play and what factors have shaped and defined the industry in 2022 and will continue to do so in 2023?
It always amazes me how fast-paced the industry is. Indeed, there's so much happening constantly. You really need to be up to speed, not only with the ever-changing regulatory environment, but also with all the latest technology. And I think it's a lot. I consider myself super lucky because I live and I work in London, which is one of the world's biggest hub of fintechs or financial services in general. And not only we have the luxury to work for or work with the companies that have cutting-edge technology and really, really innovative products, but we can also be part of shaping the future by testing these and trying to perfect it the best way suitable for our businesses. I think 2022, at the beginning of 2023, has been a very, very challenging year for most of us. From a financial point of view, given the cost of living crisis, which touches on every element of our daily life, from the prices of the food in the supermarket to the price of the petrol we put in the car, and the list just goes on. The amount of times the Bank of England has raised its base rate is unprecedented. It is currently at 5.25%, and they are expecting the rates to remain quite high for at least the next 2 years. I mean, for obvious reasons, this has greatly affected the fintechs, most of them needing to downsize in one shape or the other. And 2023 has been a lot in general about cost cutting, cost optimization, but that didn't mean even for a minute to slow down. AI has been around for a while, and when it comes to compliance, I think it is starting to be really, really revolutionary now. Machine learning has done its best, but AI is at a different level. It is super useful for the fight against financial crime in a number of ways. I think financial crime itself has not slowed down despite the joint efforts of both the regulators and the industry. And I believe that the current financial crisis and the economic climate is actually just accelerating all the financial crime happening, as people are obviously more and more desperate to find their ways to make some extra cash. And when it comes to criminals, they also have a growing pressure to generate more and more, or just in a different way. I have seen a lot of companies trying to de-risk once again in 2022 and 2023 as well, to make sure that they don't get a big slap on their wrist from the regulator, regardless whether it's because they have been dealing with crypto companies who turned out to be processing illegitimate funds or other high-risk sectors that they just simply don't have the appetite for. We continue to see increased risk in the sanctioned areas throughout 2022. If you consider that the war in Ukraine has been going on for sadly over a year now, there are a lot of additional entities and people on the sanctions list who companies need to continue carrying out and enhanced monitoring for, because it's just not something anyone can get wrong these days. You cannot afford not screening your database or customer base and send funds to a sanctioned entity or individual. The sanction lists get updated almost on a weekly basis, and it's just essential for companies to ensure that they screen all their clients properly. The key thing that makes fintechs different from banks or big financial institutions in general is the pace and how fast they operate, how fast they open new markets and come up with new products. Mm-hmm. I find it absolutely mind-blowing, but it can be super dangerous, as the criminals have the tendency to follow the pace. I believe the past 12, 18 months has been the time where fraud has started to rise again, despite of the projections that once COVID and the aftermath is over, it would settle down. I think the projections were really off, and we have seen a continuous uplift in attempted fraudulent activities, mainly with the scams continuing to evolve. Ransomware has been on the increase as well, not only in scale, but also in variety, which adds yet an additional extra cost for firms to make sure that they keep their cyber defenses and training programs under ongoing reviews. One of the major financial crimes, which I'm personally very, very passionate about, well, to put it properly, passionate to fight against.
Yeah, hopefully.
drugs and arms trafficking, which has been continuously growing the past few years already. And the amount of money that has been laundered through these crimes up until now has reached a peak amount, higher than we have ever seen before. The Financial Action Task Force report clearly indicates that behaviors companies should look out for in order to be able to detect and then report these types of criminal activities. Yet we can see the effects of the increased criminal activities filtering down to the level of everyday life. I am hopeful that 2024 will be the year where we see a bit more support from the regulators when it comes to practicality and focusing on the bigger picture. We still need to have an overarching regulatory landscape for all the crypto providers, an uplift to the AML regulations, which are more tailored to the industry, and just general support as well. I don't believe that any of the financial crime activities will slow down the next year. They will change in one shape or form and possibly evolve even further. And as long as fintechs and digital banking is growing, there will be ongoing cybercrime happening, and the firms will continue to be under a lot of pressure to be agile.
You mentioned AI, and you said some words about the bright side of the usage of AI, but here I cannot see also an issue to be solved. How do you overcome the challenges posed by the AI skills gap created by a shortage of trained data scientists and software engineers?
To put it very, very simply, I think AI is great, but it's not going to save the world. Mm-hmm. Or at least not from a compliance point of view anyway. I don't believe that you can purely rely on AI when it comes to complex financial crime procedures. And I find it important to have both the human element and the artificial intelligence work together as a team instead of one stepping in for the other. Many, many firms use AI to detect or prevent fraud, for biometrics, data analysis, for transactions monitoring, and just like process automation in general. Mm-hmm. There is a shortage of trained data scientists and software engineers indeed.
Even in London?
In London, yes, but I think that's a cost element at the moment. Okay. Because obviously, even if they are available, they don't really want to leave their current jobs. Mm-hmm. And if they would, they would look for a massive uplift in their salary. Mm-hmm. So there is a gap in the market. But I think outside of the UK, it's a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. And as the global financial crime trends are continuing to rise, companies and their compliance teams encounter growing data sets, which will outpace any traditional tool. So we'll push the resources to catch up and then support the growth of AI instead. I would probably challenge to say that there is going to be a gap for knowing how to use AI to the best of your advantage. Once the technology is there, you need to define very, very clearly what flexibility you need or you don't need and how you want to use the intelligence, in which exact procedures and in what way. And here comes the human element in place, as not only do the engineers write the code, but compliance staff, and mainly the second line, need to be able to use it in a most advantageous way for the company with the risk tolerance that they are happy with. So I would say, ultimately, the question is how smartly can you use AI and how fast can you train your team to utilize it to their advantage?
Criminals have taken every advantage of new technologies to grow and prosper in their chosen illegal activity. While they are not regulated or governed, they are well-funded and coordinated. Crime as a service facilitates financial crimes through digital means. They will, for example, provide the money mule network able to perform large volumes of transactions as part of money laundering efforts in exchange for a fee from the customer, an organized crime gang. How do you prepare to fight against this new phenomenon?
Having a comprehensive compliance program is the number one key to be able to fight against financial crime, to be able to detect it and to a certain extent to prevent it. You need to make sure that your company has an enterprise-wide risk assessment as a start to understand what exact risks are posed to the company and how are you willing to or how are you able to mitigate that. But also, what risks are you willing to accept based on the controls you have in place to monitor them? I find it crucial to have robust financial crime systems and controls in place, starting from onboarding, obviously, throughout transactions monitoring, and the list just goes on. But the most important is not only to ensure that you are up to date with the regulatory expectations and you're always working off the latest AML legislation or recommendations, but rather that all the systems and procedures are adequately tailored to the organization itself. You need to work with your three lines of defense to ensure that criminal activity can be detected, prevented, and when necessary,
very important point.
Reported, obviously, yes, as it's expected. I don't think it will ever be possible to say that you have everything under control and literally no financial crime is ever going to happen at the company under your watch. I mean, if this is possible, it might be the day that we compliance professionals lose our purpose. Also, it's a very ideal world. Not even banks can reach this far. You just need to ensure that you do the best you can to fight the criminals. We are not the police whose responsibility is to actively stop crime. Financial crime prevention and compliance is more about having the right controls in place in the right time and utilize all the data these give to you to pick up patterns and build your rules around it. Obviously, again, going back to AI, it is a massive help here. Regardless if you think about ID verification, for cool companies now this also comes with a selfie, or customer risk rating methodologies, or real-time or post-transactions monitoring rules. They all work based on the data you have harvested from the system, based on past behavioral patterns, and they help you to create even better rules or better procedures. You need to be able to demonstrate that your tools and systems are up to date and are able to prevent the best possible, but mostly to detect the criminal activity, which then you need to report to the local financial intelligence unit. I love working in the financial crime world, which, I don't know, maybe leads back to my legal background, as criminal law was always my favorite part. Because you see a very, very big variety of potential criminals trying to play the system. And you can really learn a lot from them, actually, by analyzing their behavior and trying to get one step ahead of them. They're getting more and more sophisticated, and most of them are quite smart. So it's a bit of an ever-evolving cycle with new trends and with the returning patterns. But it's something super, super interesting.
Allow me to change the topic a bit and let me put our work in a broader context. To make compliance a shared responsibility, it is essential to create a cross-functional team within the organization. Build teams around problems through training, which empowers them to own risks and decide how to mitigate them. This will result in a more cohesive and effective organization that can meet its goals. How can you encourage collaboration and awareness to make everyone feel like they play an important role in meeting the company's goals?
I completely agree. It is crucial to have a cross-functional team or teams who have an overarching responsibility for risk and compliance. The three lines of defense model sounds a bit old school, but I think it shows perfectly how you need to ensure that you cover every angle of risk from a compliance or financial crime point of view, starting from the business operations towards risk and compliance, and then finally internal or external audits or auditors. I often feel like that compliance is seen as the necessary evil, that the one that, you know, everyone should consult, apart from the legal teams, obviously. But they try to avoid it as much as possible because the advice might not be exactly what they want to hear. There has been, I think, a mindset shift in the past few years, luckily, at least definitely in the fintech industry, where this has changed somewhat. And compliance is being seen more and more as a business enabler, the one that helps the rest of the teams to come up with things which will actually work. And they are trying their hardest to ensure that this happens in a proactive way. I think what I find very, very crucial is compliance training. Raising awareness must be part of our daily job. And now I don't necessarily mean the onboarding obligatory AML trainings that you need to do when you join a company, and then the yearly refreshers. Everyone needs to go through it. It's also a little bit boring, I think. But I more mean the ad hoc trainings, which are targeted to different departments or different audience, so to say, about different topics. We need to continuously make sure that the different teams have good compliance awareness for them to collaborate in a way that is the most beneficial for the company. It is essentially also their best interest to understand their own regulatory obligations working for a licensed financial institution, so they can raise suspicious activity reports or, you know, like just comply with the regulatory requirements. Good compliance culture is the key to a successful fintech company, in my opinion. Sadly, I have seen a few where this was lacking, and it was quite apparent that, you know, it was the small thing that was still missing for them to succeed or to maybe just excel a bit better. The more people understand what compliance is and why it is important, the easier it will be to collaborate and work on all the projects instead of going in circles and never-ending discussions about, oh, why do we need to do this? Or can we avoid doing this? I like to make trainings as interactive as possible. This is often difficult when you have teams all around the world, and most of this needs to happen online. But I think it's important to try and go the extra mile to still have some sort of human interaction with them, with very interesting or even exciting real-life examples, so they can get a bit excited about what we all do and how important it is and how they can impact it from their angle. I think it really helps the vibes, as opposed to just, you know, completing the usual online trainings, but it is hard. The tone, however, always needs to come from the top.
Exactly.
I can go on about compliance as much as I want. If the culture is not right on the executive level, I think no one will ever think that it really is important, and no one will, you know, buy into how cool compliance is.
As for the last question, I brought you another strategic issue. As we enter a global recession, it is critically important that banks or fintech companies as well do not cut costs in their compliance department. I believe that compliance must not be seen as a cost center, but as a business driver. Since 2008, the number of fines levied on the banking industry has, for the most part, been directly connected to the fact that many financial institutions cut back on their compliance spending to free up costs. How can we ensure that history won't repeat itself?
In my opinion, it's inevitable that cost cutting will affect some parts of compliance. But I think it has been clear throughout the years that compliance is so essential now that they can't keep making people redundant and still expect miracles. What I have seen in the fintech industry in the past 10 or so years is that other departments get affected a lot more heavily. And now I'm talking about marketing, product, surprisingly even the tech teams, which you think in a fintech is crucial. But when it comes to compliance, I think companies have been quite careful because they are aware of the consequences and, as you called it out, the possible fines. A lot of companies also realize that they can still save cost or be more cost effective, to put it nicely, if they place their operational compliance teams in countries where the labor is cheaper. There are still very highly skilled and very, very smart people out there, but it will probably cost a fraction of what you need to pay in the UK or even Europe. Not to mention that they are even willing to work the hours that are the most convenient for you. I think this is a good solution, and it has proven to be working at big banks as well as fintechs. And as long as you have good people, it doesn't really matter where they are located. After COVID and all the lockdowns, this has, I think, shifted even more with all the remote working and flexibility around your location. I am personally a big fan of hybrid working. It's nice to spend time in the office and have some proper one-to-one time with your colleagues, but it's also good to be able to work from home, save time on your commute, and in my case, to be able to pick up my kids from the nursery on time. The companies need to realize that the more they try and save on compliance costs, the more they will need to pay either for regulatory fines or for consultants to come in and sort out whatever couldn't be done internally. And that is going to be very, very costly. Andras, as you know, I am not confident to say that history will not repeat itself. Not necessarily because of the financial crisis we are currently in, but because of the fact that a lot of companies, especially startups, try to scale with only having very, very basic compliance procedures and controls in place, not really considering the risk that this poses to the company long term. And with growth comes risk, and sometimes the founders or CEOs of these businesses make the call to excel first and then later on to clean up the mess, which is a big gamble, and I believe it will work out less and less because the regulators see this happening now as a pattern, and probably it means that they will implement stronger measures already at the licensing process, or they will just try to catch, so-called, the outliers in the beginning of this cycle, as opposed to coming in for an audit and issuing fines.
Laura, thank you very much. After this interview, I'm more than confident to say that Hungary desperately needs you back.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very nice of you. Hopefully one day.
Thanks for joining me today. You have just listened to The Defense Lines, the podcast for the control functions. If you found value in this episode, please subscribe so you will never miss a show. András Bácsfabi is signing off, but till our next meeting, do not forget, those who try to convince you that safety can be increased only by jeopardizing your business goals will eventually deprive you of both.